Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Four Wide Salute podcast. I am TJ Lane, along with Brandon Segal.
Hey, everybody.
On today's podcast, we're going to talk about something that's been a topic that's been much talked about in pretty much every form of motorsports over the past 20 years or so, and that is aerodynamics. And Brandon, I'm not sure that there's a form of racing out there that aero has not had some effect on the quality of racing that we see.
That's absolutely correct. There's not any level outside of maybe like go-karts, and even some of the faster cars they'll talk about drafting, but it's universal, and it's the classes of cars you wouldn't even think. Last year at Eldora, I was at one of the USAC races, the non-wing sprint cars, where there's really not a lot of aero tricks on the cars themselves. But Chris Windham won the feature and jumped out of the car and talked about how important it was to get out front because clean air mattered even in a non-wing sprint car.
And I would say of all the major types of motorsports, that non-wing sprint cars is probably the type that you would think that aero is not quite as important. And, you know, that's one thing I've heard for years. You've heard people say, in short track racing, dirt track racing, aero doesn't matter. Well, in my opinion, all you got to do is look at wing sprint cars and non-wing sprint cars, and that'll tell you right there how big of a difference that aero is and how much it matters.
It's a completely different race car once you take the wing off. That they react differently. They have to set them up completely differently. It's not the same race car anymore.
One thing that we've seen the aero, I think, come more into play with the dirt track racing has been with the dirt late models and with the dirt modifieds. And, you know, Brandon, if you take a look back over, gosh, I would say just 10 years, if you look at the bodies on the late models compared, compared to what they are today to even 5 years ago, 5-10 years ago, there's a huge difference in them.
Yes, and it's actually a lot of things that are technically illegal by the rule book that, you know, the bigger sanctioning bodies have let teams get away with. I think you remember when a local dirt late model racer, Jackie Boggs, he had a bit of a angled roof, and one of the major sanctioning bodies made him fix it before racing that night. However, it wasn't very long before everybody started having angled roofs and having deckings that weren't level, and they were dishing out the center of the interior of the late models to create a wing effect, a downforce effect, and even the noses have gotten more and more intricate with the different lines built into the molding.
There's no doubt that you can tell the visual difference in the bodies of the late models, but one thing that I think we can see a difference in is the style of racing that we see with dirt late models. I think that the aero has become so important that it's totally changed the way that these cars race.
If you're looking for it, it becomes obvious that in the heat races especially, whatever car jumps out front is usually gone. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the one that set quick time. It just, if it's, you know, good equipment versus good equipment, the guy that gets the lead has that advantage. And it's that way sport-wide, but it's something that we saw very little in dirt racing until fairly recently in the last 5 to 10 years where it's become prominent.
One thing that you and I have talked about with that is it seems like that the dirt late models, that they're racing a lot more kind of like what the wing sprints race. You talk about with the heat races, usually the guy that gets out front, he's gone when he has that clean air. And usually with the late models in the heats, they all kind of, get single file and, kind of spread out where they can't get too close to each other. And then, In the features, it seems like that the racing really starts when the cars get into lap traffic.
Very much so. And even, you know, the start of these features, usually, you know, the first, you know, top five or so, they'll get kind of singled out and they get into a phrase I've kind of grown accustomed to is running distance. There is some kind of gap in between the cars, and it varies class to class, where the air is either too low of pressure or too turbulent, and if you get any closer, your car just doesn't stick, because even the car setups now are very low on mechanical grip because they want to keep the aero platform. because the arrow is king if you have it. So it overrides what a mechanical grip or mechanically good car would do versus one that's set up for that arrow platform. So they set them all up to be as fast as they can, and that's great until you have to deal with traffic, and then you get stuck.
Is this something, Brandon, that you think that the sanctioning bodies are going to have to start addressing, that they're going to have to start getting these body rules back to what they should be and start enforcing them to the way they should be, or else maybe see this quality of racing keep getting affected?
Of all the rules and tech that you could do or propose to try to help racing in general, especially dirt track, I think this would be one of the more easily enforced. I don't know why we aren't enforcing the rules on the books. I don't know why we're not going to the nose manufacturers of the late models and modifieds and saying, we can't do this. Here's what's legal. Build this. Don't go out of the bounds, or we're going to kick the drivers that buy your product out of the track, essentially. And nobody wants to kick a driver out that shows up to a track, but we've got to do something. And if we can hold the manufacturer responsible to, this is legal, don't go out of this box. You hold the driver to, this is what is okay, don't go out of the box. I don't know why we can't do that.
It seems to me like with the dirt late model racing that we're almost kind of going back in time. It seems like history is kind of repeating itself because, you know, with the late models, they were all pretty stock back in the day. And then we saw the wedge cars come around. And with the wedge cars, that was the big thing with those was the aero. That's when it really kind of first, I think, brought the aero into the game with the dirt track late models. And what happened with the wedge cars is they just got so daggone expensive that, I mean, guys were selling out left and right. Car counts went down. So eventually in that time, what the sanctioning bodies had to do is they just had to completely outlaw those type of cars. And they just had to almost start from scratch with the rules. So then that's when, you know, when the late models changed again to a more of a stock appearing type body, and aero wasn't so much of an issue. And you know what? It stayed that way for a long time. And it seems like probably, you know, three to five years now that we're kind of, I think, creeping back into that to kind of maybe, you know, kind of getting back into that with kind of the wedge type look of the cars. And as you talked about with the way the bodies are, that's essentially what they're doing. It's the same aero effects that the wedge cars had.
A layperson really doesn't know the difference between the old day wedge cars and the late models today. You'll hear someone who just doesn't know any better, they'll call a late model car a wedge car, when we, with more of the historical purpose, we know what the wedge car is. We think of the 1980s when, you know, there was literally looked like just a big door wedge. Now they have let the teams get away with a little, and if you look at the profile of the car with the nose that's got, you know, smashed down, you've got that angle in the roof, you've got the angle through the decking, and then you've got that big, huge rear spoiler, and we're basically back to the wedge car that we were at in the 1980s.
Yeah, that's what we've got too, and unfortunately, we're seeing the same type things happen. We're seeing we're seeing the cost of running these cars go up, you know, quite a bit, and we're seeing guys selling out. And I think it's a good question. And, you know, it's maybe not even just about the aero aspect of it, but, you know, with other aspects, is it time in the next year or two for the dirt late model sanctioning bodies to just kind of totally, you know, take the rules and just kind of start over again?
I think long-term, we've got to have some regressive rules and things that can be enforced even outside the body. But it seems like to me the body would be the place to start, because the off-the-shelf pieces, the nose, the spoilers, the end planes on the spoiler, or the wing, as some people call them, but whenever somebody calls them a wing, I cringe. Those parts are easily, you know, ordered at different sizes. You know, the crate cars, a few years ago, it was common that they would run a larger spoiler to try to get them to run competitively with a super. So it wouldn't be that difficult to say, okay, now we're going to run a smaller one. And the people that do the noses, okay, well, we're going to get rid of this mold and we're going to do a simpler mold, something that looks more like 2008 instead of what we're doing now with all the extra lines and grooves and how it's lopsided so that you get that travel for the aero platform. I think it would just be that easy place to start.
I think so too. I think with changing the bodies, I mean, yeah, you know, that's something that, I mean, it costs money, obviously, to put a body on a race car, but I'm with you. I think that's kind of the cheapest, probably the most easiest way to kind of start getting these rules going the right way is to change the bodies. I think it's something you just come out, you know, maybe like midsummer and say, hey, starting, you know, 2020, this is what the rules are going to be on the bodies. And that, you know, that gives, you know, everybody plenty of notice to kind of conform to all that. And I think it would be good for the sport. I think I think it would help some with the cost, but I think even more so, I think it would help get that quality of racing up there more.
I agree with what you said, announce, you know, midsummer, and I say even earlier. If in theory we were to do this next year, I think you want to announce it right now so that guys can use up what they have on the shelf. They can plan out their ordering until October, November, even December now with the dome. And then come January or come speed weeks, you know it's going to be the new rules. And by then, just about everybody puts a new body on their cars anyway.
Yeah, that would definitely be the perfect time to roll it out. And, you know, I think the time's now to do that too. We're seeing dirt late model teams kind of selling out in record numbers. You know, we're seeing car counts that are just dropping every year, and I think that's something that would help to give a boost. And you know, I think dirt late model racing is still the most exciting form of racing out there. But you know, as we talked about, it's definitely has affected the quality of the racing some negatively. So it's still great racing, but we always want to make it as best as it can be. So I think. I think making some changes with the aero is definitely going to be the way to go.
And even, you know, you talk about exciting racing, and to me, you know, I'm on the World of Outlaws sprint car kick, and we know that the wing sprint cars are big, big downforce race machines. They got the wing on the front. They got the huge billboard wing on the top. But even sprint cars have taken steps to limit the downforce. They used to have dished center section wings, and that's been outlawed for years now that there has to be a flat section in the wing. And they can run a wicker bill. I think they've limited the sizes of the wicker bill several years ago now, 2006-ish, 2007 maybe. They had these odd-looking wings where the end plates on the wings were angled so that you would get added benefit of downforce through the air. And those were done away with within a month or two, I believe.
What we've seen is anytime that a sanctioning body has taken action to get the downforce off the cars, whether it be with the World of Outlaw Sprints, with some of those rule changes that they have made, whether it be with NASCAR when they went with their low downforce package, it seems like the kind of the common theme is with low downforce, it makes the racing better. So here's my next question, Brandon. If that seems to be the case, and I don't think that's a matter of opinion, I think it's a matter of fact that low downforce makes for better racing, why in the world are we seeing, like NASCAR, going to a high downforce package? We see, you know, IndyCar, F1, we see them at still a very high downforce level. You know, we're seeing late models high downforce. Why are sanctioning bodies not doing more to try to fight this problem?
Well, we got to kind of take that one piece at a time. You look at NASCAR, who went to this low downforce model, and like you said, the racing was better because drivers could get close to one another. Doesn't mean they stayed close. A better car could get away if you had a better car. But what they've done now is they have added huge spoilers. They've added a lot more of the front splitter to get this downforce chasing some kind of fool's gold, hoping to have big draft races like IndyCar or back when they, in the 80s, when they had the Monte Carlos and Thunderbirds. that were big draggy cars, and they're chasing this idea, just in my opinion, completely down the wrong avenue, and it boggles my mind what NASCAR's engineers are actually thinking. We had a quick conversation the other day, and I'm almost wondering if they have a group of very intelligent engineers who don't really understand racing, and the executives of NASCAR are saying the objective is drafting. So these engineers are just doing whatever they can to develop drafting and be damned if it's actually better racing or not, because that's the objective.
Well, and the one thing with this NASCAR deal going to the higher downforce that I think something that nobody's really kind of thought of is, you know, it's obviously made the effect on these mile and a half tracks, but it has affected all the other tracks that NASCAR go to too. You know, we've seen it. We saw it at Phoenix. I think it was probably the worst Phoenix race probably in the history of NASCAR when they were there back in the, you know, back in the March. You know, the guys couldn't get within a half a second of each other for the most part. So, you know, it just, not that Phoenix was ever a great track, but it still, it killed the racing there. And, you know, you and I were at the Martinsville Speedway for that race. And you know what? For the first time that I can ever remember, aero came into effect at Martinsville. Guys, you know, had a hard time getting to each other and a hard time passing each other because of aero. And it's like, for whatever gain that they were hoping to get for the mile and a half, so they just screwed up all the rest of the tracks.
Yeah, and I agree with that take, and it still confuses me what their mindset is and how we got to adding all the downforce back to these cars. And it just creates higher corner speeds and more dirty air. And in my mind, there's two types of dirty air. There is the turbulence that comes off the spoilers, which is just chaotic, uncontrolled, and you cannot model turbulence. I mean, that is a big thing in engineering, is trying to figure out any way to model turbulence, and there's no way of doing that. So there's no sim data, there's no iRacing, there's nothing that can tell you what that turbulence off these race cars are going to be in real life when they're in the wind tunnel doing whatever sim work they're doing. It's not there. And then the second type of dirty air is just the void of air, which helps drafting, but it hurts downforce because it's just low pressure air. So you get within a running distance and it starts, your car begins getting tight because it has that void of air. But then once you get within whatever that next running distance is, then you run into the turbulence. And that's when you see guys that just get behind somebody's tail and they just shove up the track. That's because they got into that turbulent air.
That's a great take on all of that. And with NASCAR, as they've gone to this new package, I think that they were so focused on trying to make these cars draft that they just went totally brain dead and forgot that, hey, With these big spoilers, with the aero ducts, with all that you're doing, all you're doing is creating that bubble of air that's keeping these guys from even getting close to each other.
If we go back to the Atlanta race, it was when Kyle Larson was leading and Kevin Harvick was second, and they were both getting in the traffic, and Harvick got to Larson's bumper, and they were on board with Harvick. And you could hear this big rush and violence of air hit Harvick's car. You could hear it. Jeff Gordon mentioned it in the broadcast booth because he heard it on the mic from video and sound they have up into their booth. And then you saw another instance in that race where Harvick got to Larson's bumper and he shoved up the track two or three lanes because he got into that turbulent air. With this huge spoiler that NASCAR has, they are creating all kinds of turbulent air off of it. And the ducts on the front, I don't know that that's necessarily creating a lot of turbulence, but it is creating that void of air.
Well, and we saw too at the Cup race at Martinsville Speedway, our seats were right going into turn number one. And we saw there was one occasion, I think it was Joey Logano. he had got right to the rear of a car going into turn one. And at Martinsville, going into turn one in race conditions, they're probably at, what, 105, 110 mile an hour tops.
And not at that part of the track. They're probably closer to 80.
No, that's true, because they were already slowing down. And we saw the hood flaps on Joey Logano's car come all the way up because of the air that he was getting at that slow of speed. So, you know, if we saw it doing that, creating that much dirty air at 80 mile an hour, I mean, my gosh, what's it doing on these mile and a half tracks?
Yeah, and the week before, Martin Truex had kind of quipped that the only way to keep the cars together for a long period of time and not have this aero come into play is to lock the cars down at 60 miles an hour. And me and you were looking at each other and laughing after Martinsville that Martin was wrong. It'd have to be slower than that.
Yeah. And you know, one thing with this aero talk, with talking about it with the NASCAR side, I'm going to kind of take this to a different level, is I think we would all agree that one of the biggest issues in NASCAR over the past probably 15, 20 years has been the quality of racing on these mile and a half tracks. So what's happened is the racing hasn't been good on these tracks. And when in NASCAR's boom in the late 90s, you know, mid-late 90s, when they started building and constructing all these tracks, all the new tracks that came out, what were they? Mile and a half tracks. And that's one thing that you and I were talking about one day, Brandon, and I'm like, why in the world did they, when they built all these tracks, why they have to make a mile and a half? And one point that you brought up that I think was great is back in those days when they were building these tracks, the aero on these cars did not affect the racing on those type of tracks near as to what it has over the past 20 years.
I believe the phrase I used was they built those tracks at the exact perfect wrong time. These cars or these tracks were coming into commission in the mid and late 90s. So that they opened up in 2000, 2001, it took that much time and planning. And in the mid 90s, you saw really good races at Charlotte, at Atlanta, not so much at Texas when it opened in 97, but the importance of aerodynamics is nothing near what it is now. And you could see guys run fairly close to each other. The cars weren't sealed to the ground and they could race each other pretty hard. Jeff Gordon was on the Dale Jr. Download, and him and Jr. were talking about a Busch Series race at Michigan in 98 or 99, and him and Jr. traded the lead back and forth, and they talked about when you got the lead, your car actually got loose, and it tightened up the car behind you just enough that he got good. So it's a very unfortunate situation, because the real reason they built the tracks as large as they did is because they wanted to showcase speed and they wanted to be able to put a lot of people at the track in a fairly condensed area instead of wrapping grandstands all the way around the track like Bristol.
Yeah. And you know, in theory at that time, I mean, it was a perfect idea, but as we saw, as we got into the early 2000s, when aero really started to come into play, it really affected the racing on these type of tracks. And, you know, the good but bad thing is, you know what, the past couple of years NASCAR had really reduced the effects that the aero had, well, you know, with the mile and a half tracks, with the low downforce package, and it showed that worked. And then all of a sudden we just changed gears 120% and we're back to probably the highest downforce levels that these cars have ever had. It's almost crazy to even try to comprehend all that, isn't it, Brandon?
Well, it's the most downforce that we have probably ever had. It probably rivals 2014, but we're also down 300 to 400 horsepower versus 2014. Now the cars are just they're not quite wide open all the way around at most tracks, but they are very close. And at Texas, in 3 and 4 with high banking, they were wide open basically the entire run. The only time you lifted was for turns 1 and 2, and they weren't out of it that much. It just it really takes the driver out of the game the way that they have the power and the downforce matched. And I want to go back a little bit and say my contention I have with something you said. You said that the mile and a half racing wasn't that good, and I firmly disagree. I don't think it's the best thing that NASCAR does, But I feel like the racing was good at times for the mile and a half tracks, and I do not feel like it. I feel like it was rarely as bad as some people made it out to be.
I think what got the racing with the mile and a half tracks, I think maybe what got such a bad taste in people's mouth with that was back when the aero really started to come into play, and that that they saw that start affecting the racing. I think that kind of got people kind of put a bad taste in their mouth. And then I think like I said, over the past couple of years, I think it got a lot better. But I think for most people, that they had already kind of made their minds up on what they thought of the racing on these tracks.
I honestly I don't know what people were looking for those kind of tracks. I know the biggest complaint was the cars would spread out, and a lot of people, I think, would just blame that on the air. Oh, it's aero. It must be aero if they're spreading out. I don't feel like that's true when we go back to 2016 to last year, 2018. I feel like at the beginning of the run, the cars were really gripped up and lightning fast, and they'd kind of spread out, and that would be aero. Because I don't feel like you can ever get rid of the aero problem. It's never going away 100%. But when the tires got hot and the lap times fell down, the good cars would come to the front. The not-so-good cars would go backwards. The good drivers would come forward. And then sometimes guys would just run away with the race because they had the right driver with the right car and the right setup for that track. And that's where you saw some big domination races. It wasn't necessarily due to aero, but I think everybody had that ingrained already. If there's big leads and big gaps, it must be aero. And it's not true. You look at this year's package, and the leader will keep about a second lead. Second place will be 1.6, 2.3, 2.8, 3.4. And that's everybody that can run the same speed by themselves getting stuck in somebody else's dirty air, and as close as they can get is somewhere between 0.4 seconds to a second to the guy in front of them, and that's all they can do.
I think that's where NASCAR, as they move forward with this next car that's going to be coming out, and really with how they do everything with the rules package, I think they're going to have to decide is that the type of racing they want? Do they want racing to where, it's going to get spread out, but the guys can pass each other easily? Or are they going to make it to where, hey, the most important thing is not passing, it's keeping guys close? Yeah, the top five may stay within 2 or 3 seconds of each other, but they're locked in and they can't pass. So I think that's kind of the question that NASCAR is going to have to ask themselves. And, to me, it's a no-brainer. I think you want to go with having racing where the guys can pass. But, as we've seen, Brandon, with some of the feedback on the Texas race, it was about impossible to pass. But there's people out there saying that was a great race. Why? Because they stayed a little closer together than what they usually do there.
The results on the Jeff Gluck poll were 69%. Yes, it was a good race. That was the highest ever for a polled Texas race, but only by 1%. So I'm confused, because to me that looked pretty terrible, but it also didn't have people thinking it was the greatest ever, because it was really close with how other races polled. So it's and that's why NASCAR cannot win. They have divided their fan base on the issue of horsepower and downforce, and it's a battle they cannot win, because they successfully divided the fan base, and the people that don't like it see enough bad things that they still don't like it. The people that like the idea are seeing just enough to justify their thought process and say they still like it. And now you have two sides that are going to be upset no matter what NASCAR's next move is.
Yeah, that was always kind of a dangerous thing too. That's one thing that you said from the start is that, with this package, at best, it has half the fan base happy and half of, and the other half of the fan base bad.
And the other thing is the drivers. The drivers have had mufflers put on them, and they can't say much. But you have some of the ex-drivers. You have Mark Martin. You have Dale Jr. even, that said this week on his podcast, if he were president of NASCAR, the Gen 7 car, they would cut all the downforce out of it. They'd be off the ground. It'd be very low downforce. Whatever spoiler they do have, he'd let the teams run it wherever they want, whatever angle. The drivers do not want this high downforce. They feel like they are in the game when the car has low downforce. They can get to the guy in front of them, and the car is moving around. And the drivers want, they want the ball. The drivers want to be in the game. They don't feel that way now. They feel like they're, the term I've always heard is throttle jockeys, and I think that's what they feel like, is they're just mashing the gas, and as much as the car will do, that's all they got.
As we close this podcast out, I'm going to put you on the spot, Brandon. You've got an engineering background, and I want to ask you, for this Gen 7 car that's going to come out in 2021. If you're in charge of the design of this car, what does this car look like to you?
Well, practicality says that we try to make it look as much like the street car as we can. That's practicality. But inside of that, I think we have a very small spoiler. We do not have any splitter at all. We have a very small valance. The side skirts will be much smaller. They don't disappear because they actually are a safety function. The side skirts' purpose is when the car goes sideways, that air cannot get under them and the car take off in a blowover situation. So that is actually a safety feature. So those don't go away, but they're smaller. We've got to figure out a way to limit the travel so the cars cannot seal off, which is why the skirts are smaller. The current cup cars, the roof and greenhouse does not match up to the side of the cars. There is a big shelf on the side of the cars, and then the wheel wells themselves, it actually has like a big sideboard. So if they get these cars skewed any at all, that's where all the side force comes from, especially that gap between the quarter panel and the greenhouse. So I would close that up and make sure that the greenhouse met up with the quarter panels. I would minimize the wheel well opening that we have, the shape of on the rear wheel. That way they cannot get lots of downforce and side force from that. The tires themselves, I would look at smaller. A lot of drivers like the idea of a little narrower tire. That way they cannot corner quite as quickly. But I would definitely try to work with Goodyear to try to see what we could do with tires in relation to the new car. They're coming out with a new engine that's supposed to hit 2022. They're saying it's going to be in the vicinity of 550 horsepower. If I take NASCAR at their word at why they're doing that, I would look at something that's 550 to 600 horsepower. I'd just make sure to get all the downforce out of the cars.
I think this could lead to some good discussion on social media. You know, when you get done listening to this podcast, that'd be great to go on our Facebook page where we've got this podcast posted at. And, you know, be sure to let us know your thoughts. Is that what type of racing do you want to see in NASCAR, in dirt late models and sprint cars? What do you think's best? Is it going to be the higher downforce or with the lower downforce package? It'd be interesting to hear everybody's thoughts on that.
It's a topic that a lot of people are very passionate about. It's interesting to get ideas. I'm going to say right now that some of my ideas have been influenced by what others have said that's a good idea, or no, I don't like that. And honestly, I could ramble on for quite some time on some of the things I would like to test and try with the current gen or the next gen cars. It's something that me and you've talked about, is the aero ducts. I would like to keep the aero ducts, but instead of having the duct end outside of the fender well to make a bigger hole in the air, I'd like to just turn those around 180 degrees so that they're blowing air toward the radiator or engine, so that you lose that little bit of downforce of the air going over the fenders, and you also create more drag in the lead car so that the car behind isn't losing as much percentage of downforce and he's not pushing as much air, so maybe he can stay closer for longer. So it's a moving target, and unfortunately, I think because the low downforce is such a hard target to hit, because there's more engineers for all of the teams that can outpace NASCAR, I think that's one reason why they abandoned it. And it's just an ongoing saga.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a battle that not just NASCAR, but, you know, I think any sanctioning body is going to have to fight. But I think it's proven it's a fight worth taking because of, you know, I think the results are pretty clear. If you get a good low downforce package, you're going to see better racing.
All right, everybody. We appreciate you listening in to this episode of the Four Wide Salute. Please do comment on Facebook or Twitter what you think, some of the suggestions you may have. I think anybody who knows motorsports is willing to listen to anyone that has ideas. It doesn't mean they're all great, but you never know when the good idea, where it's going to come from. I heard one driver say that I don't care if you're sitting in the third row of the grandstands. If you got an idea to make my car faster, I'm interested in hearing about you. So don't be bashful. Most people aren't. And until next time, guys, please check us out at 4Wide_Salute on Twitter. Check us out anywhere that you listen to podcasts, and we'll see you guys next time.